From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of August, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. We'll recap an article that Gary Schnittke has written about cover crops, other kinds of conservation practices, including carbon sequestration and how policies may have to be finessed in order to deal with cash rents and longer-term functions as it's related to land as opposed to the short-term one-year leases. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Just a quick reminder as we get started for the afternoon that tomorrow morning, the United States Department of Agriculture at 11 o'clock Central Time will release the first crop production report of the season for both corn and soybeans. Of course, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate are due at that same hour, and you can find those numbers on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or in my @CommodityWeek Twitter feed. So look at willag.org, and frankly, you'll just see the Twitter feed there at that time. It's posted directly into the website, or you can go to Twitter and search me out @CommodityWeek for the updated numbers as they're released at 11 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. Again, that's the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates and the first blush look at the crop production figures from the United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service in their crop production report. Again, 11 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. Now, here the way the numbers finished in Chicago for this Wednesday, September corn today, up 7 cents at $5.56 and a quarter, December 5.59 and a quarter, 6 higher in the March, 5.67, 6 higher, a September beans, $13.47, finished a penny and a quarter lower for the day, November up 3 and a quarter at $13.40, and January futures at $13.44 and a half, 3 cents higher on the day. Bean meal futures at $353.90, down 3.60 for the day, and the bean oil at $62.22. $1.03 higher. Wheat futures December contracts, soft red at $7.39 and a quarter a bushel, down a quarter of a cent. The hard red December at $7.22, down 4 cents on the afternoon, and the spring wheat in the December at $8.97, down 5 1/4 for the day. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract at $127.57 and a half cents. That's the October, actually, down 55 cents for the day. September feeders at $162.82 and a half, 22 1/2 lower, and lean hogs at $85.85 per 100 pounds, up $1.97 and a half cents. Crude oil on the day at $71.40 a barrel, and the Brent 77 cents higher, and the regular contract at $69.18, up 89 cents. Gasoline on the RBOB, that's a wholesale price at $2.30 a gallon, up 3 2/10 of a cent for the day. Gold futures at $1,754.50, up $22.90 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 35,350 is 195 points higher for the day, and the U.S. dollar at 92.885 is down 0.17 for the afternoon. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. You can find us and listen to us anytime you'd like on demand on the website at willag.org or in your favorite podcast application. Search us out in places like Google, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Jackie Vex at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri now joins us to take a look at the marketplace on this day before the USDA WASDE report. Jackie, thanks for being with us. Let's start first with the support and resistance as usual.
All right. Corn, September support at 543, resistance at 601. December 517, 561, March 520, and 574. And if you wrote these down last week, you realize that there was no change from last week at all. On beans, August is gone. September 1284, 1403. November 1264, 1409. January 1259, 1459. When we look at gold, I moved to the December contract, Todd, because that's where the largest open interest is. And so support there is at 1716 and resistance is at 1815. On the Dow Jones, 35091 support, 38521 resistance. U.S. dollar, boy, she's bounced off of that support, 91.73 a couple of times in the last few days. Support up at, resistance at 93.87. Bitcoin is just amazing, to be honest with you. Each week lately, what had been resistance now became support. And that's exactly what happened this week. So support is at 41,989. Resistance is at 50,982.
Where are the funds positioning their money?
The funds right now, Todd, have just been light traders and mostly on the positive side. They seem like they're pretty fickle. One day they're long, one day they're short. Yesterday there was no change in their corn position. Soybeans, they went up 3,500. Wheat up 6,000. Soy meal, zero change, and soy oil up 4,000. So you can see the action as everybody's waiting for this report to come out tomorrow.
Any news on the export inspections?
Wheat exports are running 26 behind compared to a year ago. 20% was where we were last week. We need to average 15.7 million bushels a week of inspections in order to meet the USDA projection. Corn 69% ahead of a year ago, 65% last week, and there we need to average 60 million bushels. Soybeans, 54% ahead. Last week was 53, and we need to average 4.4 million bushels. Export inspections were disappointing for corn on Monday, and that's why each week lately we've been going up more and more when it comes to the amount of bushels that we need to reach the projections. But beans have been right on, so pretty good about that.
Speaking of beans, China's been buying big time.
Yes, after being in the wind for who knows how long, they're back. And this is the fifth day in a row now that they've bought. You know, and of course, that assumption is that unknown is China, too, which it has always been of late. And so, you know, that has definitely supported the market. Market's been really quiet, Todd. I'll tell you, quiet and somewhat thin. Positions, you know, are being changed or taken ahead of the report on Thursday from the USDA. And so I think we have numerous people sitting on the fence. And one of the things that I believe that people miss is the volatility that there is in this report or is in this marketplace, which has forced margin requirements to go higher. I mean, normally you would look at a corn contract and probably see anywhere a nearby corn contract, 22, 23, 24% volatility. Now you're seeing 33 to 45. You're seeing those types of numbers on option volatility. And so it just says to you that people may be more cautious than they normally would be because it can get pretty tough. So let's just put it that way.
So those WASDE numbers are due out tomorrow, along with the first crop production report from USDA NAS that comes out at 11 o'clock Central Time. Folks can find the report and the numbers on our website at that time at willag.org. Do you have the estimates in front of you?
I do. For the 2021, they're estimating corn production at 15 billion bushels compared to 15.165 last month. Corn yield dropping to 177.6 from 179.5. Soy production, 4.375. That's down from 4.4 billion. And soy yield at 50.4 compared to 50.8 last month. When we look at the ending stocks, 2021, they have us at 1,096,000,000. That's actually higher than where we were in July, on the July report. They have beans at 148. That's also higher than where we were on the July report. And for 21-22, wheat, they have us at 644 compared to 665. Corn, 1.297 compared to 1.4. And beans, 159 compared to 155. We look at the world-ending stocks, slightly lower than what they were last month. And the Brazil corn thing is going to be the big thing, Todd. Everybody's waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, CONAB came out. They've just been steadily reducing the amount of corn production down in Brazil as far as the Safrinha crop goes. And so average guess from estimate or from the analysts is 88.7 compared to 93 last month. We've been waiting and waiting for this to change. The one wild card here is that, you know, this report is still coming from WASDE, the World Ag Supply and Demand. And sometimes they are not as aggressive as what we might see the USDA NAS be. And so they are expecting corn to drop from China about 8 million metric tons. That's pretty significant. And so, you know, there's just a whole lot of things going on all the way around. Brazilian corn, of course, they expect to be higher next year. And Brazilian soy, they expect to be higher than again next year. And that's primarily because of the expansion of acres they've got going on down there.
Hey, let's come back to Monday of this week. Different report from the United States Department of Agriculture. And it's important to disconnect this from the crop production report because the two of them, while you would think would be related, are not. But I'm wondering what that did, if anything, to the bushels at risk that you calculate and some other things that you look at.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It certainly caused a big flurry on Twitter, I can tell you that much. People were screaming blood and guts because, you know, we're in August, and now we see 11% jump higher in the good to excellent categories. But if you looked at, you actually looked at bushels at risk, Illinois stayed the same. There's still 6% in the poor to very poor. Iowa actually went from 9% up to 10%. Minnesota went from 23 to 24%. South Dakota went from 26 to 29%. And North Dakota stayed the same at 47%. So when I look at major risk of loss, that's just calculated basically on the very poor acreage, 367, almost 368 million bushels. If you look at, you combine that with risk, meaning the poor, you have actually 1.184 billion bushels. So it went up slightly from what it was last week. So even though the big word out on Twitter was, of course, how 11% change, they missed seeing some of the changes that were going on the bottom end, too. So, you know, and that's one of the things, Todd, when you look at this USDA report that's coming out, so many people are so focused in on yield, you know, and yield is really important. There's no question about that. But let's take a look at what happens if we drop 1% on harvested acres and 0.5% on beans. And I would say 1% on harvested acres wouldn't be out of line at all, because we know that there have been a lot of abandoned acres. Between North and South Dakota alone, they planted 9.7% of all the corn acres this year. So if I take and drop harvested acres to 83.5 from 84.5 and leave the bushels at 179.5, and this is what I fear may happen, people will see the bushels haven't changed and they'll just be negative, negative, negative. But you got to look at the bigger picture. That change in harvested acres actually drops ending stocks down to 1.255 billion bushels. That's equivalent to dropping the yield down to 177 with the current harvested acres. So there are different ways of being able to see lower production in this marketplace. And so it'll be interesting to see if they do that. Now on the beans, I dropped them 0.5%. If we do that, that drops our ending stocks down to 135 million bushels. And reality is, if we go down to 50, our ending stocks go all the way down to 86 million bushels if we leave everything the way it is. And exports aren't even as high as what we had this year. So very, very interesting scenarios. This is going to be probably for the first time in a long time, a pretty interesting August report.
Hey, thank you, Jackie. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You know, about 60% of the farmland in the state of Illinois is rented in some form, and that figure has not changed for decades. There's at least 80 years worth of data that proves Illinois farmers own less of their land than most other farmers in the nation. The running total again is about 60%, says University of Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnittke. However, he goes on to say the tenure on the farms has begun to change.
Larger farms are the ones that are increasingly farming a larger percent of those rented acres.
Schnittke used USDA NAS Census of Agriculture numbers to tease out this data.
In 1997, 33% of the rented acres were farmed by 1,000-plus acre farms. Fast forward to 2017, it's 60%. The group that has grown the most is the 2,000 plus acre farms, and they went from 2% in 1997 to one third in 2017.
The census data shows as farms get bigger, more of the land is rented. For instance, farms of less than 500 acres in the state of Illinois are likely to rent about a third of the land. Farms bigger than that 500 acre threshold are likely to rent a majority of the land. Returning to that 2,000 acre farm, it's likely to rent more than 70% of the property. Well, the development of larger farms in Illinois and around the nation, for that matter, has a couple of implications. First, it opens financial risk to the land rental market. Bigger farms face tougher times when cash rents go up fast. Secondly, bigger farms, even average-sized grain farms, have a tougher time transitioning to different cropping methods and/or policy requirements. Gary Schnitke points to cover crops as an example.
There's no guarantee that a farmer is going to continue to farm that land in the future. So we sort of have to, if we want to encourage conservation practices, cover crops, we got to take into consideration that that there's short-run cost, and if they're totally borne by the farmer for long-run gains, which won't necessarily accrue to that farmer, we have an issue there.
An issue landowners and the government will need to address, says the Illinois Extension agricultural economist.
So as we're looking forward to these conservation practices, perhaps federal policy that incentivize those, we really do need to consider owners of land, farmers of land, and remember that those rented acres are 60% of them are on 1,000 plus acre farms where economics is really key.
Public policies that encourage cover crops and other conservation adoption practices need to consider rental incentive issues if widespread adoption on rented farmland is desired, says Schnitke. Similar incentive problems, he says, could occur with the development of carbon markets. Those agreements likely are long-term, and uncertainties surrounding future control of the land may reduce farmer incentives there to adopt on rented farmland. Let's check in now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us. When will we cool off? Have you done that yet out there, by the way?
We have not. It's been very nasty the last couple of days out this way, as I know it is in a lot of places across the Midwest. We are looking for the relief about the same time as you are, I think. It'll come through here sometime on Friday or late tomorrow night. The lower parts of the Midwest and the Central Plains will certainly see the relief at that point in time. And hopefully we'll get a little bit of rain to precede it so we can squeeze out some of this humidity out of the air, which should occur. And so we ought to be looking at some dry and pleasant conditions as we go forward into the heart of the weekend. The unfortunate part of this is that it is still August, and cool, drier air masses don't usually stick around very long, and this one certainly won't either. We have a rather significant heat wave that's going to be building up in the western parts of North America as we go through the weekend, and it's going to run very quickly into the plains and the western corn belt as we get to the early part of next week, and be already in the eastern part of North America as we go through the middle and latter parts of next week. So we'll go right back into the uncomfortable weather. But for a little while, let's get ready to enjoy some weekend weather.
Does that slide in from the northwest? Is that why we're getting it at the same time, relatively speaking?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we do, of course, have that tropical storm Fred that's approaching the southeastern U.S. That may slow down the frontal system, but I think it'll still successfully get all the way through the Midwest proper. We may still have some heat and humidity hanging on in the Tennessee Basin, parts of the maybe... well, the Northern Delta for sure. And and that just sets the stage for it all to come back northward again as we get this whole pattern to reverse next week.
You mentioned rainfall, but is it widespread and fairly large amounts or just sort of hit and miss, and you might get some, you might not.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I'm certainly not going to see significant rain in the northwestern Corn Belt of much significance, although we will throw some shower activity into Iowa and some of the neighboring areas there when the warmer air starts going back to the north again later in the weekend. But for the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest, it will be an erratic rain distribution. I would think that the heaviest rains are going to be south of the Ohio River, probably more in the Tennessee Basin and the Carolinas. And of course, there's a little squeeze play taking place here where the front comes down, goes past the Ohio River. Tropical Storm Fred comes up and stops that front from moving much further to the south. And of course, it brings its own rain in. So we end up with a lot of heavier amounts of moisture occurring across the parts of the Northern Delta, the Tennessee River Basin, the Carolinas, and eventually Georgia, of course, as the storm comes inland.
So more heat again next week. Will it remain muggy across the bulk of the Corn Belt?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The only place it won't be muggy would probably be in the far northern plains, but in the upper Midwest. But those areas are supposed to be able to grab onto some of this Gulf moisture that's returning northward. So they too will get rather humid. We're going to see the temperatures go back over 100 degrees in the Dakotas, parts of Canada's prairies, the upper Midwest, maybe of time before the next frontal system comes through. But this heat will be most significant from the end of the weekend through the first part of next week for those upper Midwestern locations. And this will be another one of those newsworthy events where we'll see temperatures over 100 into Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba eventually.
How quickly does it abate?
It will disappear fairly quickly. We actually have a fairly large pool of cool air coming in on a trough of low pressure during the week next week that will bring a quick end to the heat in those northern areas. The concern is that we may allow for the ridge of high pressure to kind of hang on in the eastern part of the country. That'll slow down the progression of the cooler air. And we could see the warm, humid environment stay with us not only in the majority of the week next week, but possibly the following weekend as well. Another complication to the whole scenario is there could be another tropical system coming into the Gulf of Mexico at the end of next week. The European model had this earlier today. And if that verifies at the end of next week, it'll just reinforce the ridge in the middle of the country and hot going on through that second weekend. It's not a done deal. We will see a cool off certainly here this weekend, very briefly in the eastern Midwest, a big heat wave for many folks next week, and then another opportunity for cooling in the northwestern part of North America, or at least western part of North America, as we go through the week next week, and then it may stall out somewhere in the middle of the country. And that keeps the heat on for the eastern areas for a while longer.
Hey, we'll talk with you again next week.
Have a good week.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media.